You're listening to Ride Along, EMT School. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max. We're two students navigating EMT school, bringing you along week by week.
And I'm Jonathan, paramedic, bringing real-world perspective.
Join us as we share the lessons, challenges, and stories from EMT school, and hear insights from those already living the EMS life. Welcome to the Ride Along.
That song gets me every time.
It gets me in the feels, bro.
I want to hear like a full version of that song.
Oh, it's in the, if there's anybody interested, there's a trailer on all of the podcasts that we did. So that song, I put it at the end of the trailer. So okay. if you listen to the one where it's like my, it's just me doing like a 1 minute thing going like, hey, this is what the podcast is. We have Jonathan, you know, the handsome one joining us for, you know, the podcast. You know, it's me and Max, and we're the oafs that are the students kind of fumfering our way through. I probably was a little bit more eloquent in the trailer. But it's like that. And then I put the entire song at the end of that. So it's there. It's there for anybody who wants it. But you know what? I'm a little like, you know, I've gotten some feedback on the song already from people who are like metalheads, and I'm like, come on, man. Like, yes, it's a popular sounding song. It's like, it's good stuff. Like, I
might have seen some of that feedback. I get their point, but I also, hey, we needed something and we needed it now.
Yeah, we need. Come on. Like, I mean, it's catchy. That's all I'm really going for.
You know how artists are.
I had to promise our friend Shinde, like, hey, it's just going to be at like the 10 seconds in the beginning of the episode and like the 10 seconds at the end. It's just the bumper. You don't have to listen to the whole song.
Right, right.
But, okay. So welcome everybody to the Ride Along EMT School podcast. I am Mike. I'm here with Jonathan. We are the co-hosts, but we are flying in the missing man formation this evening, on this week's podcast. Max, is at home hocking up a lung. He was not feeling good today. And, he was like, but I'll come anyway. And I'll come to the studio and I'm like, no, you're not. You are going to stay home because we're going to be like, you know, smart, professional healthcare providers. And we're not going to get everyone else sick around us. So he wanted to be here, but, he sends his regards to the listeners. But he will be missed tonight. We're going to try and pick up the slack, but you know, Max brings that special kind of flair to every episode. So it's going to be rough without him. I don't know how to do a podcast without him.
he and I were talking offline about his homework experiences. And I just I had to tell him, be like, look, dude, like this is a different kind of question that you're probably not used to answering. So it's just been a long time since I've had to use my brain like this, but
yeah,
I just encourage him. It's like, look, man, like everybody struggles at the beginning. So if you're doing EMT homework, EMT school homework, just know it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You're going to make it through.
Yeah. I mean, just to give the listeners a little bit of insight, the way that the episode structures are, the way the timing works out is whenever we're talking about stuff, we're usually going through those classes at the same time, but you'll hear them kind of spread out over the course of weeks. And the homework that Max and I have been doing is the homework for the topics that you'll be hearing tonight and in the next episode, which is medical terminology. Anatomy is tonight's episode. Mm-hmm. Pathophysiology is next week. So it's like medical, like, you know, med school day one type stuff, I assume. Like, and then they go into way deeper stuff, but it's like, hey, organ systems and, like, you know, mid clavicular and like all these proximal distal, like words that you're like, I don't use those ever. Like nobody does. It's like trying to have a conversation with like a lawyer. It's like hereunto, therefore, you know, in perpetuum. I don't like, it's Latin and Greek and like it's a lot of words. It's word salad, and it's tough.
And the reality is you get like a chapter or two on it, and then you're on to the next thing. So you really don't get as much of it as you should. I mean, I kind of wish I had gotten more anatomy and phys, which I did get it in paramedic school. But mm-hmm. even at this point, I'm like, man, I probably need to go take a collegiate level anatomy and phys class to really be as on top of my stuff as I'd like to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll dive right into talking about that.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Before we do, this is where we're going to mention our sponsor for this week's episode. We like to do this every at the top of the episode so we don't forget, because I'm terrible at remembering to do these things sometimes. But tonight's episode is sponsored by Bulletin.net. The Ride Along EMT School podcast is produced and sponsored by Bulletin.net, the free event listing platform for firearms, medical, and outdoor training. Whether you're looking for your very first class or your next advanced course, Bulletin makes it easy to find and connect with trainers all over the country, including our own schools, Iron Forge Consulting Group from Jonathan, and Zero Point Training from myself. Visit bulletin.net. That's bulletin.net for training purposes only. That was a pretty good read, right?
That was a good read.
I practiced it.
So, I mean, Bulletin is the exclusive place to find out about Iron Forge Consulting Group classes.
And Zero Point.
Yeah, and Zero Point. We might post some things some other places, but if you want to sign up, that's where you're going to have to go look, is bulletin.net.
Yeah, so. It's a huge passion project of mine the past few years. But just know that Bulletin is producing this podcast. We produce another podcast called The Berm Limits. It's all about getting good training to good people. Mm-hmm. And that is the mission of Bulletin. We're getting there. We're making waves. So, but we're proud to sponsor this podcast and especially the efforts and, you know, encouraging those out there that are on the fence about maybe learning something new, especially EMT training, which can be intimidating. We're hoping mm-hmm. to make it a less intimidating process for everybody that listens. Let's move in to kind of the it's funny because this week is about medical terms. So having the medical term of the week at the beginning of the podcast is like, well, yeah, we're going to talk all about medical terms tonight. Like, it's just right. what we're going to do. I think this is turning out to be a pretty useful section because it kind of sets the tone. It gives us a key concept that we're going to chat about in the rundown of the class notes, which is tonight is anatomical position, because we were talking all about anatomy. But there's a specific thing called anatomical position, which as an EMT, as a paramedic, anything in emergency medicine, and I'm sure it goes beyond that into the medical field in general, mm-hmm. there is a universal term called the anatomical position. And it's hard to kind of just, it's easier to show, but I'll talk everyone through it. So imagine a person standing in front of you, kind of shoulder width apart. They're just standing still. Their arms are at their sides and their palms are turned out towards you with their thumbs pointing outwards. That is the anatomical position.
Sure.
And anytime that you refer to something on the body, that is the orientation that you have to picture in your brain, right? So if you're talking about the patient's, like the front of the patient, even if the patient is face down on the ground, and then from your perspective, the front of them is behind them. So technically that would be behind in that moment. You ignore all that stuff and you reference whatever you're talking about to the anatomical position. Right. Is that, right. Would that be a good summation?
Yeah. I mean, it is so we can all be on the same page when we're talking about what's going on with a patient. It is the standard in which we've all agreed upon, regarding positioning, but yes. And so anytime we talk about, patient positioning, we are always talking about it from that anatomical position and from the patient's perspective.
Yes.
If we talk directionally, you know, left and right and that sort of thing, it's always going to be from the patient's perspective, not necessarily our viewing perspective.
Right. Right. So like if we're going to say, oh, well, there's a cut on the patient's left upper arm, That's going to be their left arm, not their the arm that's to the left of them as we're viewing it, because that perspective can change, but the patient doesn't. Like, it's a fixed kind of, you know, concept that, like, if you're referring to a left upper arm, it's always their left upper arm, right? Mm-hmm. So you're using that as kind of your North Star to, like, that is our orientation point, is the anatomical position and their directions.
I've noticed students as they get more, eventually they do get more comfortable, but as they're trying to, like, think through that, I've noticed them have to, like, orient themselves to, like, okay, if I'm thinking about the patient's positioning, and then they can, you know, more easily describe those things.
Yeah.
You know, in regards to the patient's positioning or where their injuries are or what have you are.
Now, there are some confusing aspects to it that I have found, and that is some of the terminology associated with the anatomical position. Like, that one's pretty easy to grasp. Like, if you imagine the in my head, every time I hear somebody say it, I see, like, the Vitruvian Man. Do you know what that is? Like, it's that Leonardo da Vinci painting where the dude with the long hair, he's got his arms down at his side. Well, he has them, like, they're different locations. They're all
spread out and their legs. Yeah. Yep.
So, the Vitruvian Man is in, like, basically an anatomical position when his legs are straight down and his arms are at his side. But, so, like, that's what I see. That one's easy. It's when you start talking about, like, okay, now we're going to use that as the reference. And then there's a bunch of descriptor terms that, like, you use to, like, then figure out, well, where on that anatomical position are we talking about? So I have a list, which we can go through pretty quickly, but, like, there's just terms, like, ways that you say these things that, like, nobody uses in normal life. So, like, you know, if I was going to say, like, hey, you got to check out the anterior portion of this patient. Like, that's saying you need to check out the front.
Yeah.
But anterior, to me, in my brains, means the back. Like, it sounds more like the back, like, because it has an A in front. I don't know. It's like, I have to learn that one as, like, being, it's anterior is the front, or another term for it is ventral.
Yeah.
Why? No idea. I need to look into that some more. It sounds like venting. So I guess maybe the sides of the body that have the vent, although I have been known to vent things out the other side too. but
when I think anterior, I think A comes before
B. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's how I kind of keep it straight.
Yeah. There's the posterior. That one's easy. Yep. We've heard posterior before.
Yeah.
And then dorsal. Dorsal's easy to remember. Like, those are interchangeable, apparently, in the posterior and dorsal. Mm-hmm. However, this is where it gets confusing, because dorsal refers to the back, right? Or the back of whatever it is that you're referencing. So if you're referencing the foot and you're saying, hey, the dorsal side of the foot, apparently, and this is what I mean, I might be wrong, because I may have taken these notes wrong. It's the top of the foot, because like, I guess the front of the foot, the anterior side of the foot, would be the bottom of the foot, because you're looking, like, you would look at it from the perspective of seeing the bottom of the foot first, which I don't understand, because anatomical position is standing. But, like, it's regardless of how I view it, it has like, I just have to learn what it means, like, what the terms are. So the dorsal side of the foot is, like, the is it the instep, the top side of a foot?
From my understanding, it is the absolute top of the foot. So, like, if this is my foot, it is that part. Yes.
Sorry, I'm turning off my phone volume. Okay. That was me, not anybody else. but yeah, so the terms they get can be a little confusing. So, but some of them are easier. Superior, you know, like super higher. That's top. Inferior, like, that's inferior to me. It's lower than me. That's low.
Sure.
The medial and lateral. So medial referring more towards the midline, like the middle of something. The lateral, like, referring more towards the outside, the outer side, right? Anybody familiar with football is going to know that term. Like, hey, we're throwing a lateral, right?
Out.
Yeah, it's going that way towards the side. Proximal and distal. These are ones that you never hear in normal life. At least I've never heard of it. Like,
sure.
But proximal being closer to the torso, right? And then distal being farther away from the torso.
Right.
So if you're referring to an arm.
Well.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. But it depends. So like in trauma classes, when we talk about proximal and distal, we will talk about proximal and distal to the wound.
That's true. Yes. So
to the individual wound. So if I'm proximal to the wound, I'd be closer to it. Not necessarily in that anatomical position, mm-hmm. because, you know, during times of continued threat or stress, or like something is still going on that poses a danger, you know, we default to that high and tight tourniquet. Well, that's right. A distal application of that tourniquet, even though it's higher on the arm.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay. So, but it would be proximal. Like if you were referring to just the body in general, you're putting a tourniquet on proximally to the arm. But if you were referring to the wound, you're putting it
right.
Distal to the wound. Is that
distal to the wound? Yes. Okay. So it, do you see how confusing
it can get confusing? Yeah. Cause you're using a reference point and then you're using words to determine like to, mm-hmm. to then clarify from where that reference point is.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that one's, and so like, those are kind of the big ones. And then there's like things like superficial, like facial, fascia, like tops, like, you know, like the surface level, and then deep. That one's, I mean, that's probably the hardest term that nobody would ever know is deep. No. So that one's easy. Like it's the deeper, like deeper inside the body. So like from all those terms, and there's more of them too, like that, those then get modified onto referencing to the anatomical position. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of class. Like a lot of the topics discussed in this particular class was all anatomy, talking about like how to communicate those mm-hmm. different things to each other. So like, and I'm going to butcher this, but I get to butcher this because I'm a student, right? Like, okay, sure. There's a cut on the upper left arm. Well, you know, you describing that, is that in the midline of the arm? Meaning like, is it closer towards the center of the arm itself, but you can then be lateral of that. Mm-hmm. And you can be, more interior side of the arm.
Yeah.
Like more towards like the inside of the arm towards the body. Or it can be distal. From the body itself, from the torso itself. So if it's distal, it means it's moving down away from the body, or proximal. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Proximal is up closer towards the torso, if you're referring to the torso. So there's just like all these new terms in there when it's like, you could say the upper left arm of the patient, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know, as we kind of get into this often, I do, we're going to talk more about, how does this actually like play out in the field when
right.
when you're in the field and then you're bringing people into the hospital and depending on who you're talking to,
mm-hmm.
We're gonna get into how this, all these terms and how they're used play into that communication part, like you're talking about,
Mike. Yeah. So like when you're dealing with patients, and I guess mm-hmm. this is kind of a good transition into like the general topics we went through for this particular class. How often are you mm-hmm. using any of this terminology?
It depends. I would say that some of the terminology is going to be used more than others, and it's very dependent on you know, what's going on with the patient mm-hmm. as to which term it is. But my preference is plain language.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a little sidebar.
Oh, I love sidebars.
Yeah. Sidebar tangent, if you will. All right. So, prior to, the September 11th attacks, as far as communication amongst public safety personnel, we used 10 codes and they did not all mean the same thing across the board, yep. and that sort of thing. Right. So, and radio is something that we're both a little familiar mm-hmm. with.
Yep.
And so what ended up happening after that, one of the things that the federal government looked at was, we need to have a unified way to communicate. And so the best way to do that is just to communicate in plain language.
Right.
We don't, because of the differentiation. Now medical terms are a little different because they're more set in stone, but yeah. I personally have adapted that mindset of communicating to that lowest common denominator. I want to be able to explain in the most plain terms as possible what's going on. Sure. Can I have that conversation with a physician level provider and use all those terms? Yes. And sometimes I do, mm-hmm. but my preference is to just plainly say, hey, they have a cut on the right bicep and this is what we did.
Yep.
On the top of the right bicep.
Yeah. Instead of saying like, oh, it's on the dorsal side mm-hmm. of their left arm. You could just right. say it's a cut on the tricep, like in their tricep area or whatever it is.
Right. Whatever it's, you know, is it correct to use those terms? Yes. But one of the things we talk about with communicating and you guys haven't gotten into report writing yet.
Not yet.
And you will. When you write a report, you need to make sure that you understand all the terminology you're mm-hmm. using because it is a legal binding document.
Yeah.
And so any sort of thing that could be inappropriately spoken about or misspoken about could be used as something to kind of gig you in that reporting process. So I always tell students, hey, just write it in plain language. Just tell me a story mm-hmm. and say it all out in plain language. But that being said, you do need to know these terms because you may read a report.
Right.
Right. I often get reports from nursing facilities and they will have the different terminology in there. And so you do need to be able to understand it.
And part of the discipline, part of the professionalism mm-hmm. is being able to work in between those two languages. Well, it's right. not even separate languages, the right terms.
Sure.
And to like, sometimes I can imagine that being a situation where it's like, that is the perfect word for this case, like for right. this particular instance, for me to communicate most clearly based off of who I'm talking to, which is a huge part of communication.
Right.
Like, am I communicating with the physician, with a surgeon, or am I communicating with the patient's mother? Like
right.
those two audiences need to be like, you as a provider need to be able to speak to both of them. Like you need to be able to communicate effectively, and communicating to the patient's mother, unless they're a nurse or something like that, they're not going to understand when you're talking about like the dorsal side of his foot. They're expecting you to be like, hey, listen, he had a cut on the top of his foot. We brought him into, you know, so-and-so and they helped him out. Like, you know, you're going to talk to them like,
right.
And like, I think that's the cool thing about EMS is like, you're the bridge between the world and the medical world, like the medical side.
Right. You know, EMS is viewed as an allied health profession. And we are allied health professionals where we kind of do bridge that gap between that. Well, very much we bridge that gap between being in the field and talking to regular folks and then having to communicate both to them, just like we're talking about, and then to those higher level providers, those nurses, those doctors. It's one of the things, like you need to have a handle on the terminology and understand it. But as far as like my day-to-day, some terms I use more frequently than others, and it is all just dependent on what's going on. Bilateral, right? Both sides.
That's a good one.
I use that terminology when we're talking about lung sounds, or if we're talking about somebody's pupils are equal and reactive bilaterally, mm-hmm. right? It's just to, you know, I don't want to have to go through each thing, especially if I've got two of whatever it is.
Yes.
I don't want to have to go through each thing unless there's a discrepancy.
And
in which case.
And if you're giving a report, you're usually giving a report mm-hmm. to another medical professional that right. completely understands. And you're not necessarily using shorthand, but there is that's a situation where that one word bilaterally mm-hmm. represents the idea that like, hey, this is happening on both sides, and you don't have to write out five words to say this is happening on both sides. Like, you know,
yeah.
it's brief. It's more brief. Where we saw one example though, where I'm like, that doesn't like, I don't know if that would be the best way to handle it. Like, oh, two broken femurs. Like yeah. I would imagine you don't refer to that as like bilateral femur breaks. It would
so Actually, yeah.
You would.
We would say bilateral femur fractures.
Okay.
Or, you know, depending on how they're viewed. So a short EMT story from the past in EMT school. We in some places are still very much like this, but we cannot make a diagnosis of a break or not.
Sure.
It's
yeah.
Very
yeah.
obvious. Right. So,
it's sticking out through the skin. I'm pretty sure it's broken.
That's yeah. Open compound fracture. but in general, if it's a closed fracture or a closed injury, we would refer to that as a painful swollen deformity.
Oh, okay.
Right, because a lot of medicine has changed in the last 15 years, and it has changed in the expectation of providers, where as an EMT, we were coming in, we were providing life-saving, stabilizing care and transport to the hospital, and we did assessments. We did not provide field diagnoses.
Sure.
Whereas now we provide a field diagnosis. This is our field diagnosis. Doesn't mean it's exactly what's wrong with the patient, but this is based on our knowledge, experience, and training. We're able to make a determination in the field. This is probably what this is.
Right.
So anyway, but that plays into what we're talking about medical terminology wise.
Yes.
Because at one point it was a painful swollen deformity, and sometimes I still catch myself using that, but depending on the nature of the injury.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a good catch-all. Mm-hmm. We haven't come across that yet, but I'm sure there will be plenty of situations like that where it's like, hey, this is how you describe this thing so that it comes across as the standard term, right? Like,
sure.
Well, when we suspect a break. Because I get it. Sometimes you can't be so plainly spoken to say, hey, I suspect a broken leg, because that's right. An assumptive thing as somebody who is not of a privilege to be able to make those determinations. Right.
Right.
But really, at the end of the day, if you were just a normal person, you can walk into any doctor's office and go, hey, I'm pretty sure he has a broken leg. And it's not held against you. But it like as a professional, you have to be cognizant of that, you know. You can't communicate that, because then it can be held, you're held responsible for making that determination.
Right. Well, and like I said, that is that painful swollen deformity. It is still a term that's used, but it is fallen out of vogue in some ways.
How would you refer to it now?
I could still use that term, but if it were a closed fracture or the possibility of a closed fracture, I would still say painful swollen deformity. But if it were an open fracture, that's very obvious that it's fractured.
Okay.
You know, or suspected fracture.
Yeah.
Right.
Or so, like a little bit more plainly spoken, like a suspected injury or a suspected broken leg, or I guess you wouldn't say broken leg, fractures more appropriate, but
it's one of those things as we progress down the line, and as we the expectations change of us as providers and what we are capable of, which is probably only going to increase as time goes on. Mm-hmm. It already has increased. That terminology will have to evolve as well to reflect that sure. increase in responsibility.
Yeah. Now, what about when you're speaking with patients, mm-hmm. like, is there a little bit more leeway there in terms of like, hey, I think you might have a broken leg, or like, I imagine as a paramedic, you guys have a huge cardiac focus, right? Like,
sure.
So like, is it, hey, I suspect that you might be having a myocardial infarction.
Right. Versus a heart attack or, you know, ST segment elevation.
Oh yeah. Right? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, you will learn. I promise. Oh, yeah. When you get to your cardiology section, you will learn. But
I know kind of about like S waves and T waves and uh-huh. you know, like I've been in the medical field for the last 20 years, but like the cardiac stuff is the stuff where I'm like, I've never really gotten. I was never on a cardiac brand, so like uh-huh. I didn't really learn that stuff. But there's some things that have been so helpful over the course of this week and the pathophysiology week, where mm-hmm. you know. kind of, I'm a little like, I've managed to pick up a thing or two in terms of medical terminology, anatomy, mechanism of action, mechanism of disease. Like those are things that I've been very familiar with the last 20 years. So like understanding how all the pathophysiology of certain pharmaceuticals and like diseases work. So I do have a bit of a leg up on that. Like, but, some of this other stuff, like, you know, the anatomical position and the referencing stuff, I'm like, this is brand new. Never using that type of stuff. Or I've never used it before.
It, ultimately, you know, it, from EMT course, you are truly getting a head first, drinking from a fire hose kind of perspective of anatomy. And I would encourage people to continue to study even afterwards. Like you and I were talking, I think it's an area that even myself, like I could continue to study just to be completely as apprised of it as possible. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I mean, it, from the day to day, talking to patients and patients' family members, I don't ever want to make a patient feel like they're dumb. Or their family member feel like I'm treating them like I think they're dumb, but plain language I find it to be the best.
Yeah,
you know,
it's kind of the default. That's,
yeah, and honestly, like, in a lot of instances, you just don't have the time to make the determination fully. You're still trying to figure out what's going on. Hey, I think it might be this, but we're not sure. We got to get them to the hospital, and the doctors are going to evaluate them fully, and they'll let you know. Mm-hmm. And I say that very, very frequently. But yeah, I try and talking to patients and their family members, I try and keep it light on the medical terminology.
Yeah.
And then maybe to varying degrees, you know, so, sometimes it's just less cumbersome to say, hey,
yeah,
they have a cut on their left arm.
Yeah, I imagine so. But like, I think part of it too is just like, if you're going to be a medical professional, you have to understand certain basic concepts. And some of those, like the most basic concept is anatomy. Right.
100%. You've got to.
Yeah. And then some of the terminology too, like things that refer to what the body's doing. And this kind of starts dipping more into the pathophysiology side, but it's terminology. So this, the class that we're talking about tonight was very much terminology focused. Like you get things like having to understand like cool words, like that have Latin and Greek origin. Like so many of those, like cardio or pulmo. Again, luckily I had a bit of a leg up in these because I've worked on pulmonology brands before,
right?
In my advertising career. So like those, like learning the root words or the kind of main word itself, and then breaking it down, and like some words have prefixes and some mm-hmm. words have suffixes, like a part of word that comes before or part of word that comes after to explain the concept that you're talking about. So like cardio means heart, itis means inflammation, carditis, those two words put together means inflammation of the heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like just starting to understand the methodology and like some of the terms and how they can combine and you know, it is that fire hose. Like going through all that stuff was like, man, some of this is new and it's a lot of new things to learn, like reference words.
Well, and some of it, unfortunately, some of it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
In that, like, okay, just for example, the one that comes to my mind, you know, going through paramedic school, depending on which instructor we had, some of them like to use the term arrhythmia to refer to a heart that is not beating
regularly,
a regular rhythm, so right?
Arrhythmia, right?
Like- yeah, arrhythmia, arrhythmia.
Mm-hmm.
And then some instructors like to refer to it as a dysrhythmia,
mm-hmm.
right?
Like a disruption of rhythm.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, looking at the roots of both of those, they're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
The heart is not functioning the way it's supposed to be functioning.
Yeah.
But which one is more correct? It all depends on who you ask.
Yeah. And then you're like, wait a second. What's the difference between arrhythmia and dysrhythmia? Well, nothing. It's just a couple of letters.
in general, nothing, because they're used oftentimes interchangeably. And that's just kind of the interesting thing about, like, I'm, for the life of me, I couldn't necessarily tell you the difference between those two terms, mm-hmm. because they are so intertwined and used interchangeably. There may be a difference. Another thing is, when we refer to, and cardiology terms are kind of an interesting place to go with this, but when we refer to something as an EKG electrocardiogram or an ECG electrocardiogram, well, wait, what's the difference?
Yeah, what is there, well, a difference between an EKG and an ECG?
The procedure is the same. Is one the EKG was the gentleman who developed it, I believe he was British. And it related sort of to his name, and so it's like, yeah, it's the term derived from his name in a way, and you know, but ECG has come into common vernacular. It's the same pronunciation. Yeah, it's the same pronunciation of the word, but and they mean the same thing. EKG. ECG, they're used interchangeably. But if you were not aware of that, you might be like, well, I know what an EKG is. What's an ECG?
Right. Yeah.
So it's confusing.
And now I'm making a connection in my brain right now in terms of like other terminology that I've heard. Now I'm going to need your help on this one. Cause I think they're probably related. They might even be, it might even be a common term that I've heard, like a jargon versus like a medical term. So is an ECG something like a 3-lead or a 12-lead? Are those different types of ECGs?
And I was wrong about the place he was from, England. I said England, but he was German.
Oh, is it Germans?
Yeah, German. So, but it's the same thing. A 3-lead. Now these are different procedures,
but are they ECGs?
They would be, yes, they would be
a different type ECG. Of cardiac, like, is there cardiac monitors, right?
They are, it is the viewpoints you are looking at. A 3-lead only looks at three different views of the heart, whereas a 12-lead will look at at 12 different things.
Right. Yeah. It's right. Measuring 12 different points of electrical contact on the body. Yes. But like what I'm sussing out in my brain is that like, it's really sometimes even three like terminologies for similar concepts, right?
Yes.
Like
there's, so you could say, all right, we're going to get a 12 lead on somebody. And I could say, well, I'm going to get an EKG on somebody, or I'm going to get an ECG on somebody.
Or I'm going to do a heart monitor on somebody. Like
a heart monitor.
Meaning like the plain speak would be like, if you're going to say to somebody who's like a patient, like, hey, I'm going to monitor your heart. Right. Like that's the plain speak. And then there's the medical, like the actual medical term for it, ECG. And then like there's the, hey, we're going to use the shorthand, like the jargon, the pro speak, if you will. And then we get to, then it's broken down into like, hey, 12 lead, 3-lead, or what, I don't know all those
four
things.
Lead. I mean, yeah. So 3 leads originally, but yeah, 4 leads if you're, when we start talking about like lead numbers, it just talks about how and where we're viewing the different aspects of the heart. But that could make a difference, right?
Yeah.
If I talk about, oh, I did an ECG, okay, typically we're referring to doing a 12 lead at this point in our history, but maybe that capability is not available to us. Maybe we can only do a 4-lead ECG. And so being specific about that, but yeah, talking to a patient, it's going to be like, hey, we're going to use the cardiac monitor to look at your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the fun stuff too, is like,
sure,
I get into the pro speak side of things. Like I love learning, like, all right, it's beyond the surface level. It's beyond the academic level. It's the like, hey, how do we communicate as peers, as professionals, as like, you know, the people that are just in this world, how do they say things? That I love hearing that type of stuff. It almost feels like you're on the in crowd. Like when you learn like how to refer to certain things in that world. And what I have noticed, in the EMS like side of things, like talking to people in EMS, they often forget that people who have not been exposed to that don't know what those words mean. Like, so it's something to be cognizant of, but it's also inherent in the culture. Like,
yes,
to talk about like apparatus or things that are like, I'm like, what are you talking? Like you were on an apparatus.
Oh, we call them fire trucks.
Yeah. It's a fire truck. Like, but like now when I'm talking to people in that world, I'm going to be like, yeah, I was totally riding on an apparatus, you know, with a 12 lead and you know, a bottle of, I don't know. Like it's, I don't know it all yet. Like
you had O2.
Yeah. I'm going to have O2. Yeah. But it's fun. It can be fun too. Like it can be intimidating, sure. But it can be fun.
There is a lot to it. I can't understate that. You're gonna terminology and like you said, the pro speak, the shorthand. I mean, we haven't even really got into the mnemonic devices that are utilized. We're just talking about anatomy right now,
right?
And the terminology associated with anatomy. It is a term heavy curriculum, EMT school, mm-hmm. but don't get too wound up about it. It's one of those things, like pick it up, utilize it, but generally in speaking every day, you're gonna use plain speech.
You mentioned That's mnemonics it. And we learned one the other night that I was gonna I'll bust out just because, okay. Like, you know, for students out there, like you may learn different mnemonics and things that help with this. Are you familiar with labs, LABS?
I am off the top of my head. I am not familiar with that one.
So, it is a way to help remember some of the, so transitioning from anatomical position to like the pathophysiology side, understanding where organ systems are and within mm-hmm. the body, we got into this is where we started talking about the organ systems themselves. Like what is the nervous system? So that's a term you have to know. It's like, you know, the brain and the spinal cord and the nerves throughout the body. But like there was also related to an anatomy, the quadrants, right? The quadrants of the torso. Does that sound right?
Yeah. You could say, torso or the abdomen.
Abdomen. Right.
Yeah.
Or if you want to use like the real word, I guess.
Yeah.
But the thorax, do we have thoraxes as humans?
Yeah. I mean, like,
yeah.
It is a cardiothoracic surgeon.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, anyway, so the abdomen's divided into four quadrants, right? There's the upper right, the lower right, the lower left, and the upper left. Those are the four quadrants. And like, usually when you're talking to other professionals, you're saying, hey, they have a pain in their right upper quadrant, right? Like something along those lines.
As you were like demonstrating yourself, it is lower than the area that the,
yeah, it's not the, your chest.
The, yeah. It's not your chest area. It is in that abdomen
below the diaphragm.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the right upper, so they taught us labs, LABS, and it goes in counterclockwise order from the upper right. So if you start at upper right, that's L, lower right is A, lower left is B, upper left is S. And then those letters correspond to whatever the biggest or like the most common organ is in that area. So the L, right upper is liver. Although the liver does kind of go across almost to both, like it goes across right. both quadrants, right? But if it's upper left or upper right, this is the hard part because I'm referring to it in my own body, but I'm trying to think about it outside my own body. But yeah, it should be mine. So the
that
upper
would be correct, yeah.
Yeah, the upper right is usually associated with the liver. The lower right, the right. A is
appendix.
Yeah, the B lower left is the bladder, mm-hmm. although the bladder is pretty midline, if I remember my anatomy correctly, but that's what they said is associated with that. And these are mnemonics. You might get a different one from different schools, right? And then upper left is S. So that'll be stomach is what they said to us, but they're both in the same area, right? So, and then there's other ones mixed in there too. Like, well, like kidneys are lower, but they're on both sides. So right. It could be the lower left or the lower right. The pancreas kind of hangs out with the stomach too, I believe. So like, you know, trying to think through all the anatomy stuff, and like you can use the big ones as references for the little ones. Like, oh, the gallbladder is with the stomach. So Like that's, you know, if you're referring to pain in certain areas, that might present as upper left. So,
right.
Like that helped. Like it's a mnemonic. Like those things can be good tools for like the learning process. So it's just to say that like there may be a million of them. There you might learn a completely different one. It's like what was the one from grade school about the planets? Like my very entitled mother bought or purchased, I don't know. I can't remember it, but it was like, you know, it goes through all the planets like Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars.
Yeah.
I feel bad now that I can't actually remember it. And then it's different nowadays because there's no Pluto apparently anymore.
Right.
Those weirdos. There's Pluto exists. I'm team Pluto.
It exists. It's just not a planet.
It's a pseudo planet. I'm still calling it a planet because that's what I learned back in my day in grammar school.
The start of a Rick and Morty episode.
But I have so many notes from each week on all this different stuff. So terminology was big, obviously anatomy. We started getting to anatomy. We started tying, like when we started talking about organ systems, then it really started dabbling into what we're going to talk about a bunch in the next episode, which is pathophysiology.
Right.
And the big difference being anatomy is the thing itself, right? The physical item, the system, and then the pathophysiology. I just mixed up that word. Pathophysiology is the things that it does. So how it interacts with all the other stuff, the processes that it makes, you know. So like, it's taking it to the next level and understanding how the body actually works, not just like the structures within it. If I'm
right,
yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
this is why I love having you around, because I can say things and then look at your face and go, yeah, you've kind of got it, but then I'm going to add into this because you didn't catch this part.
You're absolutely right. So my method of teaching and my method of learning is equating things that are maybe, you know, how can I equate the different things? So if we think about the human body and all of its parts, the sum of its parts, right? That's an engine, right? So each part has its purpose in an engine, and we need to know where those parts are and what they do. But then when we start getting into how do they all play together, and then what do the individual parts do and play into things, then we get into the physiology part,
right?
The pathophysiology part. So you know, the anatomy, hey, that's the engine as a whole and its individual parts. And then the pathophysiology is how does that engine function with all of those parts?
Right. I think that's a great analogy. Like a carburetor is a thing that mixes, right? Like that it's a device on an engine, but the pathophysiology of a carburetor is it mixes air and fuel together to make efficient burning. Right. Like, so it's like, it's the concept that the carburetor is there for.
Right.
Right. I haven't really thought about the car analogy. Also, side note, I really like that and I'm going to steal it. But also, I think that's a sign of a good teacher, is somebody that can then like instantly come across like, you know, analogies. I love teaching in analogies. Like, okay, how can I relate to something that you understand and switch this process around? So like, oh, it's like, you know, it's like cars. It's this part of the car. It's this, the heart of it is this thing, you know, this nervous system is like the wiring harness, the skin is like the radiator, you know. It's like, now I'm making all these connections in my head of like, oh yeah, you can probably make the analogy of all these different things on a car.
And to that end, it's like that's how I individually learn.
Yeah.
You know, if doing flashcards works for you, 100%. I know a lot of people who went through EMT and paramedic and they like to sit and write flashcards, or they write notes out, and that's their thing. But for me, I have to be able to think about it. And what else in this world do I know about that is kind of like this thing? And how can I like relate those two things? And once I can make those connections, exactly like you're talking about, that's how I internalize things. So I try and recognize that for myself and for my students. When I have students come through classes that, you know, hey, somebody might get a lot from lecture and taking notes, but then it's like, I need to make these examples that we can all maybe relate to.
Yeah. So my learning process, what I've learned throughout the years is that I get way better at something if I can internalize it, rehash it in my brain, and then teach it back out, like to help explain it to somebody.
Sure.
So this entire podcast is absolutely a self-serving learning tool for me,
right?
To basically hack my own brain each week into taking my notes and turning them into things that my brain understands.
Like, you know what's funny? Exactly me participating is exactly that, because I need to be able to, you know, tell you guys what's going on as far as when you have questions. So
yeah, I honestly, it's like, you know, it wasn't planned for this podcast to be the educational tool that it has become for me, but like, it's totally like helping me each week, because like, I'm remembering concepts from class number one. Right. That typically would kind of float in my brain and go out, because that's like, without something synthesizing and like internalizing the stuff, I would, I know I would not be retaining this nearly as much. So, hey, you know, if anybody out there wants to go through EMT school, make a podcast and it might help. Let's see how it works after episode 42 or however many we have planned for the ride along. Is a lot. Like we have every class planned out to be an episode. So we have plenty to talk about over the course of the next, I think we'll probably be going for 6 or 7 months is like how long the episodes will be released.
Sure. And the fact that, I mean, so you say class, but it sounds like chapter by chapter.
Well,
or like body of knowledge by.
On average, each class is like 2 chapters.
Yeah.
Some are more and some are a single chapter. Like,
right.
Like the next episode, I think, is a single chapter. I think it's just chapter 7. Is like pathophysiology was like a long, like it's a pretty weighty topic. Like there's a lot of concepts in it. So, but this week was like medical terminology and anatomy. Those were two separate chapters. So, we're breaking it up by the actual classes that we learned.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
So taking a 4-hour class and distilling it down into a hopefully 45 to 1 hour podcast and kind of talking through the different concepts each class. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's a great way. And it's like, if you're actively going through EMT school, obviously maybe the chapters don't line up one for one, but like, this is a great review if you're
I'm gonna listen review. Through and be like, oh yeah, this is like my study guide, but hopefully helping other people along the way too, and you know, give them a little bit of entertainment, you know, and sharing stories and the kind of learning process itself. But those are really the main concepts that we went throughout the week, and then we kind of finished on something that we've been touching upon this entire episode. And that is how it relates to the real world, because each one of those steps along the way needs context. Like, oh, well, you refer to anatomy and you refer to certain terminology, but you break that down in the real world to plain speak or, you know, more simple terms, especially when talking to patients and all this. So like, they were really good at kind of giving us the context and the field application of it. But obviously your experiences too, in terms of like, this is how we really do it. Like that's something that is very, I think, the hardest part to take away from the class is like without going out and doing it.
Right. And it's one of the things that a lot of students struggle with. And it's something I struggled with going back to school for paramedic school was I had been in the field doing the thing already for so long, and it's like, man, I know that I just need to sit down and just do what I'm told to do. And that's what I ended up having to kind of like tell myself, hey, it's okay.
Yep.
Just for these few months, sit down, just do what you're told to do. And that's the best way to get through it. But yeah, there's a discrepancy between how things are done in the field and what you learn in class. I'll say this, it has gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
That divide is shrinking. It used to be pretty large. One of the things, this is side story.
Okay. Let's get in. Let's get on. And take a ride.
And we'll get more into this when we get into pulmonology and respiratory issues and things like that. But one of the things was 15 years ago, if somebody needed oxygen, no matter what, they were going to get 15 liters by a non-rebreather, no matter what.
What is that?
That was always it is the mask that goes over your face.
Yep.
And then it's got the bag at the bottom of the oxygen reservoir.
Uh-huh.
So you were going to get 15 liters of oxygen pumped through that into that reservoir and into that mask. And anytime you had difficulty breathing, anytime, you were going to get exactly that device.
Mm-hmm.
And coming out of the field, I very clearly remember the first time somebody had difficulty in breathing, I went and reached for one, and the medic I was with was like, "What are you doing?" And I thought I was doing something wrong, because the answer to every test question was 15 liters by non-rebreather. It is not like that anymore. As far as like how it's taught, is taught. We are trying to get to a particular like milestone or goalpost or certain diagnostic level where we want to have that patient as far as their oxygen saturation is concerned. And so there's a lot more discernment that's allowed on the provider than at that time, than 15 years ago. So yeah, but that, to me, that is the most glaring example of how that divide is shrinking. Is, oh, we now trust you to be able to make this determination as to whether they can use a different device. And we had other devices on the trucks.
Sure.
That was the thing. That was the thing. It's like, we talked about the other devices in class, but no, if somebody had difficulty breathing, you were going to get
15 liters
by non-rebreather, no matter what.
I do love that, like that side of it, especially somebody who's been in for 15 years, is it?
Yeah,
15 years. So like, you know, and even just hearing differences in 15 years, it's like, yeah, it's cool to see how that changes. You know, mm-hmm. certain aspects of society don't seem to change at all. Some change drastically, like especially with different technologies available. So I think that's always a really kind of interesting way. And like, especially like I was re-listening to our episode 2, I think maybe it was episode 1, the history of EMS, and just kind of listening through, like, oh yeah, there's so much we can get into in terms of history and like changes and things that have, I think that'll be a recurring theme on the podcast for sure.
We're going to talk about medicine changing a lot because and I like to point those things out. I think that we kind of have to understand where we came from to understand why we are where we are. And kind of where we're going. So I'm sure I'll mention a lot of things like that as we go through this.
I'm sure we will. Cool. So that's kind of the rundown of this week. The class that we had in terms of terminology, it was medical terminology and anatomy. That's a pretty good gist of the topics. Now for this week, we don't have Max.
He's gone.
He's not here right now. He's probably hacking up a lot. He's having a pulmonary crisis at home. Thankfully not here in this same room as me. Like, no, dude, you stay home. Like, it's okay. We'll be okay. So he's not here to give his tools of the trade this week. But we have Jonathan here with a tool of the trade that you know, I think is a really good one to mention, and that is
tourniquets. Yeah, so limb tourniquets. These are commercially available devices used for controlling bleeding from the extremities, right? The upper and lower extremities. When I started in EMS, tourniquet was a dirty word. We did not have the commercial devices existed because we were, you know, fighting the global war on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq. And so those devices had been out and available for several years, but they were not available in civilian stateside EMS hands. So when I went through EMT school, tourniquet was a dirty word. It was life or limb. You're going to lose that limb if you use a tourniquet, no matter what. And we had to manufacture them with cravats or triangular bandages.
Yep.
And any other device that we could use to make some sort of windlass, right? Or the stick that is on the tourniquet.
Yep.
And there was no good way to secure them or anything like that. Fortunately for us nowadays, we have got commercially available tourniquets.
Mm-hmm.
This is a soft T wide. I think I don't remember exactly what generation this is, but this is one of the more recent generations. And then we have the new Snake Staff Systems 1.5 inch ETQs.
Is that the new gen, the Gen 2s?
This is the Gen 2. So they've revised that a little bit. That's getting some tests and evaluation from me. It's not quite ready for game time all the way without a secondary tourniquet.
Yep.
But what here's how this relates to civilian EMS. As I said, I didn't even know what a tourniquet looks like until a little bit after my EMT class. And fortunately for me, I got involved in tactical medicine pretty early on. But tourniquets over the years, I have seen them filter onto ambulances more and more frequently, and they are a regular part of an EMT's trauma toolkit that you're going to use to save a life. That it is the quickest and probably most effective way to control bleeding from an arm or a leg, which depending on the mechanism of injury can be very lethal, very quick.
Mm-hmm.
So, something.
I think it's the least investment that you can do to have the biggest amount of impact for helping save a life. Like,
absolutely.
In terms of carrying medical equipment on you, and this is where we start getting into the worlds that Jonathan and I know very well in terms of, you know, martial training and that type, like Jonathan more than me, definitely in terms of like tactical medicine. But this is something that in my life, I have a tourniquet on me all the time, the time. It's a essential part of my quote unquote EDC, my everyday carry. And, I think that's at bare minimum, I make sure to have one of those on me, for traumatic injuries. Everything right. else that I would normally carry with me, forms of bandages or, occlusive dressings, things of that nature that also help with traumatic injuries. Some of those things are a lot easier to improvise in the field. A tourniquet, a really good windlass tourniquet, is not something that is easy to emulate or improvise. So having one of those is probably the best bang for the buck that you can have in terms of just having a piece of medical equipment on you that could have the biggest impact, I think.
I would agree. I did an interview with another one of our friends on his website, and he asked me, he said, what one piece of equipment that you would carry every single day? My tourniquet was the one piece of medical equipment that I, no matter what, I'm like, that's coming with me. And in conjunction with that, a pair of gloves.
Yeah.
Right. Because I may be providing aid to somebody else.
And it's free. Like there's nowhere, there's no reason why you couldn't carry a small packed pair of gloves.
Yeah.
Or some of the smaller, more compact tourniquets in some way, shape, or form.
So in that instance, we hit our body substance isolation or our PPE.
Yes.
And then we have our tourniquet available to us. But it is the thing that we have the shortest margins of error when it comes to time on, just like Mike said, it is very difficult to improvise a effective tourniquet in the field. And if you're injured yourself, or even if you're if somebody else is injured, it's to the mental bandwidth that it takes to cobble together a tourniquet versus taking this commercial device and applying it is significantly less.
Yeah.
The threshold of being able to provide care is significantly less. So it's
no longer the verboten thing that it once was, which is great. I think we learned a lot of stuff throughout the years, and like especially the global war on terror. And to me, I do get the warm and fuzzies when I see people talking about tourniquets openly and as, mm-hmm. as like, you know, a valuable piece of medical equipment, especially in today's world where traumatic injury is so prevalent, and not even just in a violent sense, in a,
sure.
like, you know, you can carry this thing and you can help save a person in any form of trauma. So,
yeah,
cause you can get limb or extremity bleeds, in really anything. But yeah, so it's just so funny when you mentioned before about the cravat and the mm-hmm. stick, like that was my introduction to tourniquets back sure. when I was 11 years old, a tenderfoot in the Boy Scouts.
Right.
I remember in the manual, there was an illustration of what a tourniquet was, and it had like a mm-hmm. stick and a triangular bandage. I think right. it was using the neckerchief from the uniform. And still remember like the terminology is like, you never do this, but we're going to show you, which right. I think is actually really akin to some of the other topics we've talked about in medicine in general. It's like, we'll teach you how to do, like, we'll right. teach you that this is a thing and that it's possible, but don't do it, but know how to do it in case you need it. You know, like, it's always this kind of double-edged sword, like this yeah. conundrum of like, well, you're not allowed to do it, but here's how to do it. So in case right. you need to use it, you can. Okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and as we have kind of evolved in medicine, right, the big term and the thing that we're doing is backing what we're doing intervention-wise with research, right? So yep. evidence-based medicine, whether yep. that's a retrospective study and we're looking at things from the past and how certain interventions were effective for people, or whether we're doing like an active study and actually studying these things firsthand and then taking those results and seeing if we can replicate them and how that spreads over different demographics and things like that. I think that medicine, a lot of medicine is exactly like that though. It's like, yeah. hey, we're going to tell you about this thing, and tourniquets is the perfect example yeah. of that, because there was one time one surgeon said one thing and then it was like it was a dirty word from there on yeah. until yeah. we get to the global war on yeah. terror, and then it's like, all right, well, we gotta keep these guys alive. How can we do that?
Yeah, and it's the world's changed. Like a yep. tourniquet in the Civil War, I'm sure, is much different. Well, the tourniquet's the same as, you know, now, but the world sure. around it has changed in terms of immediate access to higher levels of medical care. Like
sure.
that changes the paradigm, and we like society and medicine should change around it. Like
absolutely.
We, you know, to make it appropriate. But I'm sure we will talk more about tourniquets. And just to give Jonathan a quick plug too, like if you want a good class, a really excellent class in how to do some of the traumatic medicine type stuff, his introduction to tact or what's
well, it? So we've got Introduction to Tactical Medicine. That's a 4 to 6 hour course
yes.
where we give you the basic rundown of those fundamental life-saving skills, including tourniquets.
Yep.
And then if you, you know, talking about anatomy and physiology, if you want to get into more of the why, we have our Active Threat Medicine series of courses.
Yes,
and
Active so we Threat have, Medicine.
That's an 8 to 12 hour class. On one end, and then we have a 16-hour variant, and so you get varying degrees of practical scenarios and practical exercises in those different time breakdowns, but the information is all the same. It is that key fundamental life-saving information, those life-saving interventions, and really understanding the why behind yep. each intervention.
It's so. Great stuff. Jonathan's a great teacher. I will probably say that many times throughout the podcast. I'm sorry if it gets old. It's just, I love learning from him. So, thank you for that. Thank you for filling in for Max this week. I'm sure he won't be disappointed at all that he didn't get to present the idea of tourniquets to everybody. I'm sure he will be, like, he's going to be like, I was saving tourniquets for like, you know, Christmas or something, you know? He'll be back soon, I hope. Thank you for doing that. So
absolutely.
We have one last thing, your regular segment.
Yes.
Which is student tip of the week. Anything for them this week, Jonathan?
I've been thinking long and hard about it. And so for this week, we're going to talk about a personal care type tip for EMT students as well as the new EMS provider, right? So maybe you've even passed your EMT mm-hmm. and you're getting into the profession, whether you're volunteering or whether you're part of a paid staff somewhere. So personal care, here's the whole deal. When you have something that you need to take care of, whether that be eating or drinking or using the restroom or maybe catching a couple catching a couple Z's, like a safety nap or something like that, you need to do it when you think about it, because you may not get the opportunity to do those things because you never know when the tones are going to drop. So keep that in mind. When you have the thought, hey, I should probably go use the restroom, go ahead and do it, because you might not get to get the chance to, because in the next second you might get a call.
The time is now.
The time is now. When you think, ah, man, I'm kind of hungry, go get something now. Also, packing your lunch is always going to be better than trying to either cook at work or trying to go pick something up. Inevitably, you always get a call.
Yeah. Hide snacks. I've already started doing that. Like I keep peanut butter cracker. I'm a big fan of those like cheese peanut butter cracker type things. Uh-huh. There's a box of them in the console of my truck because I often don't have enough time in between finishing work and class for EMT class. So I'll wind up like hopping in the truck and going, all right, well, thank God I got these four crackers that I could eat on the way to class and at least hold myself off. But yeah. So sounds good. Now is the time.
Now is the time.
Drink, take care of it.
Use the restroom and take a nap when you can.
You would think you don't have to tell people like, hey, if you need to pee, you should go pee. It never fails. Like people will not do it. Like you will get on the road, you will get into the thing, they're like, I gotta go. I'm like, we just started. Like this is what's like running a family, you know, like having a family of people around you when you go on road trips.
Word of caution though, if you're a student, maybe don't take a nap while you're doing your clinical time, but
maybe
for the future, put that in your back pocket. Yeah. You should be doing those things.
Tactical naps. All right, so we've gone through the gamut. We've talked about everything from this week's class. Thank you all for joining us and for listening along with us. This is where we'll kind of encourage you to come check out the Facebook page. Check us out on the socials. All the links are in the bio, so check us out there. But we'll wrap things up, and thanks for taking the ride with us. We'll see you next time on the Ride Along.
See ya.
This podcast is for educational and storytelling purposes only. It is not medical advice or official EMT training. Always follow your accredited instructors and local protocols. Heartbeats racing in-